Blog Talk Radio.
It's the V-Spot. I'm your host, Dr. Vic Tater. My co-host is Bill Foster. V-Spot Radio is brought to you by Planet Vic Tater Blog Network. Get everything you need and a few things you truly do not want. Only at Planet Vic Tater.
Okay, we're live. And you know, Neil came in for a photo fucking finish. I mean, Neil, I didn't think Neil was going to make it this week, and he slid in right at 11. So, I mean, kudos to you, Neil. I got a guest this week. I've known him online for years. He goes by the name SLL, but I'm just going to call him Steve.
How you doing, folks?
I'm doing pretty good. We just got back from a one-year-old's birthday party.
At 11 Central Time. That's quite the eventful one-year-old birthday party.
Well, actually, we got back 2 hours ago. We're just kind of worn out from being outside all day.
I gotcha.
And also trying to make sense of those fucking Olympic ceremony opening ceremonies.
I thought it weird when they were doing the whole Industrial Revolution thing. I was almost worried. Like, are they basically pro Luddite? It almost seemed like they were bashing the whole Industrial Revolution.
That seemed to be an ideal. Okay, well, I guess just get out of this. Go into something more fun in theory. Talk about some wrestling from this week. This week was the 1,000th Raw episode. Now, a few things I noticed about it. Now, I don't, Steve, when you watched it, what did you think of the opening video they did?
I liked it.
Well, you know, the thing is, and I'm not really trying to be negative about it, but, you know, I was watching this, and I was like, these are the clips they picked? It's like,
well,
I'm watching this, and it's...
I mean, that's... But that, then again, that's sort of the reaction I had to their old opening video. This was sort of a... Oh, well, compared to those clips, these are, you know... It's nothing that I got, you know, truly excited about.
Yeah, I was just watching it, and, you know, maybe they were trying to do that, you know, because they were trying, you know, because they're already in the shadow of Steve Austin's era already enough, you know, so maybe they just weren't trying to build up. But I was watching, like, they showed the thing with Shane McMahon and Randy Orton, and then the Shane McMahon-Kane feud, and I'm thinking, no, did people really think these are things that people remember from Raw? I mean, I would be trying to bury this footage in a, I would be pouring cement. And I mean, I'm not saying this to bash Shane McMahon, because, you know, he had moments over the years, but goddamn, those aren't the things I'd be picking.
I'm trying to remember what I said about, I wrote something about Shane McMahon several years back about him, like, being, something along the lines of him being WWE's Tommy Dreamer. I can't remember exactly what it was, but.
That's like,
I think it was like right after it was in whatever year it was that MVP jumped from SmackDown to Raw. This would have been what set up the Randy Orton match, where they had this match with Randy Orton and MVP, and it sort of looked like they were kind of trying to push MVP big with it. But then at the end, he just kind of falls into the void, and Shane McMahon runs out to attack. Randy Orton with kendo sticks or whatever, and then he rushes out and, like, poses triumphantly in the crowd, and I was like, wow, Tommy Dreamer.
You know, the thing, you know what it reminds me of sometimes, and I've said this, WWE has this vibe about the main eventers. Have you seen the Simpsons episode from season 10 when Homer was the football coach?
Yeah.
And he kept putting Bart in the game, and finally Bart didn't want to be in the game, so he pretended like his leg was broke, and Homer's solution was to forfeit the game. And that's how I feel about WWE sometimes. Like, if John Cena's leg was broken and they didn't have anybody else, Vince McMahon would just cancel Raw.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not saying that's a defense.
I mean, I
kind of
feel like with Triple H going into semi-retirement, that's already what they've done.
I don't understand what they're doing. And, you know, to get to the end of Raw, they had CM Punk turn heel, or I'm told he turned heel. I was on the phone with my sister, and, you know,
he alleged heel turn, yeah.
You know, okay, and here's the thing about it now. People are saying, well, Punk's a great heel. Here's the thing, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
If you turned Rey Mysterio heel, Rey would be a great, an amazing heel. I have no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
That he could do it. John Cena would be a great heel, but here's the thing about it. Just because you can, why?
Yeah, that's one thing. And, you know, it's another thing which I brought up elsewhere is that, you know, a lot of people have mentioned, in addition to, oh, CM Punk is a great heel, which I think he is, and, oh, CM Punk's babyface act was kind of shitty, which I think it kind of was, and kind of but you know, he was definitely underachieving. But yeah, they seem to think, well, the solution to his shitty babyface act is to not make him a babyface. I think the solution probably should have been to not make him shitty.
Yeah, going back, you know, because I talk like this, and I hate when somebody goes to a live show and that's all they talk about because, you know, it's a frame of reference. But, you know, like I said, I went to the WWE live show 2 months ago, and I was in the crowd with CM Punk, and you know I'm not a huge CM Punk fan.
Yeah.
But he's over. I mean, and he was as over as Cena. I mean, people were losing their shit.
Yeah, he...
It was like, yeah, they went crazy for him.
They love him. They absolutely love him. And, you know, maybe he's not Austin, maybe he's not Hogan, maybe he's underachieving, but they fucking love that guy.
They do, and the thing about it is they're doing that.
And he can't just throw a heel turn at the problem and expect it to go away. You know?
Well, you know, they don't have any faces to fight him. That's the thing about it. They're putting a band, you know, I was watching Money in the Bank pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And I remember watching the end of it, and I said, you know, they are in a fucking mess with John Cena, because I don't know what they, you know, I was just looking at it. I didn't know what they were going to do, because I was thinking, you know, putting him in the Money in the Bank match, that killed time. But you still have the problem, they don't have any heels to have him fight, it's not running laps. They messed up Tenzai.
Mm-hmm.
You know, exactly. So I didn't know what they were going to do. Little did I know they were just going to turn Punk heel.
Yeah. This is not... There are too many people who are happy about the heel turn that I actually think are smart people for me to want to say this. In general. But
they'd rather watch him as a heel, you know, which I guess I can understand that, you know, because he hasn't been really shitty.
There's definitely, I mean, I'll certainly give him that, but there's a very Russo-esque element to the way they're approaching this.
He's
underachieving as a face, so instead of, like, trying to, you know, take the time and effort required to address that those problems directly, they're throwing a swerve at it and walking away. And that will magically make everything better.
And, you know, they're going to run a John Cena match for 2 months, you know, then they're going to be back in the same position they were to begin with.
Yeah, and which is another astounding thing about all this. They're going to try and turn CM Punk heel by precisely replicating the circumstances under which he was turned face. That is amazingly stupid.
Well, you know, if I didn't know better. I mean, you know, maybe they are. Maybe they're trying to recharge Punk as a face by trying to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think they're smarter than I'm giving them credit for.
Which, again,
but,
it almost seems
but
like...
I've been burned on that thought too many times before, man.
Yeah, you can't really... the only thing you hope for WWE is that the match is going to be good.
Yeah. You know, at least this is... As much as I don't like the angle, it does at least involve a lot of people I like, so I'm inclined to think something good will come out of it, even if on the whole it's maybe not a good idea. But
it'll lead to a good main event at SummerSlam.
Yeah, definitely. Those always have great matches against each other, and I'm sure this won't be any different.
Yeah, so that's about all I can think of that they're going to do. And again, I'm trying not to be too negative. And, you know, if I was, again, if I thought they could plan this far ahead, I would almost swear they did the AJ stuff with Punk just to try to make people more willing to boo him later.
Yeah, I see something to that.
Because, again, he was sandbagging. I mean, he really was the worst part because he didn't even want to play along. Because I remember one night, you know, watching when Miz looked like he almost got involved, and it gave it a lot of energy because Miz actually put something into it. Punk kind of gave across the vibe whenever he was in it, it's like, I don't want to be in this. That's my perception. You know, I could be wrong.
I mean, maybe not. I don't know. I think this is the wrong approach.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really, you know, all you hope for is it's going to be a good match, and maybe on Monday that he won't actually cut the promo everybody's expecting.
Yeah, I don't know where else you go with it, though. Unless they just abandon ship on the whole heel turn idea and try to, you know, make him more tweener-ish or just like an edgier face like he was last summer.
Maybe they're going to do something wrong.
Which honestly wouldn't be a bad idea at all. But, you know, you couldn't turn Austin heel at Mania X7 by having him pass out in a pool of his own blood while The Rock had him in a sharpshooter. That doesn't work.
Yeah, the only thing I could, which they might be trying to do, and the thing about it is, I think people are really forgetting how bad people turned on The Rock back in the early 2000s.
Yes, they are.
People are really forgetting it, and I mean, it's easy to, because they kind of, you know, they were trying to do it,
Go on.
Yeah, because, I mean, Punk can do it. Cena didn't have the juice to do it.
No.
Get people thrown, because, you know, Cena, it's like, you know, where are we going to listen to the mannequin?
Yeah, Cena came pretty hated, and, you know, I know it's been a long time, certainly, since they booed The Rock, and, you know, I think they've done a very good job of presenting The Rock in a way that avoids the circumstances under which he did get turned on until now.
Yeah, I mean,
I've heard it said that, you know, Loss, who I think is a very smart guy who I have a lot of respect for and who I very strongly disagree with on this issue, said that it can't happen again. And I'll tell you, I actually did a little homework today. I went over to, you know, it's one thing for us to try and guess what the WWE mainstream fans are thinking. I actually went over to WWE.com, and there was an article called "Was CM Punk Justified?" an editorial they put up on the website, and I read through the responses. And there were 106 responses, and I wouldn't necessarily say that this is representative of the average WWE fan, but it's probably closer than what anyone on Pro Wrestling Only or the Death Valley Driver board is thinking. It's probably, I would certainly guess it's closer than whatever I'm thinking. And the, out of 106 responses, 106 responses to the article, how many would you guess had people saying that what CM Punk did was wrong and that The Rock was in the right? Out of 100.
I'm guessing maybe 40.
Six.
Yeah, it's like I was trying to be, the thing about it is, and I'm not saying this again, but, you know, my nephews, who I take care of, you know, I usually have them every day taking care of them, they're really heavily into wrestling right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the 8-year-old loves CM Punk. And I told him what CM Punk did, you know, after he saw it on Raw, and he said, I don't care. He was right to do it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the thing
absolutely.
About The Rock is, if you phrase it right, and I used this comparison before, you know how everybody has a relative that's a little more successful than you?
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah, everybody has one, you know, and deep down you want to bash their head in. And they might not even mean anything by it. You know, but eventually you grow to resent how it feels like they're honoring you with their presence at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and that's how it is. And, you know, Cena doesn't have the, again, Cena doesn't have the juice to bring this up.
No.
Because, you know,
Punk has to be done.
You know, Cena's, well, yeah, Punk says, you know, the fans are going to listen because Punk may be a douchebag, but you're more willing to listen to him because he seems a little more genuine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's what I say. I mean, it might happen. I don't know how it's going to, you know. They might use this just to get Punk over, but I really don't know what they're doing. Because it doesn't seem like they know what they're doing like they used to.
No.
Like,
it's been that way for a frustratingly long time now, unfortunately.
Right, and you look at Tenzai. You look how they botched Tenzai coming in compared to just 5 years ago with Umaga.
Yeah, granted, Tenzai is a bit more of a nuanced gimmick than Umaga, in that Umaga was actually Samoan. But it's not that huge of a distance to close.
Right, he just needed to learn how to work the gimmick. And he was thrown on live TV. He was having to figure out how to do this shit that he's never done before.
Yeah, that was really baffling.
I mean, Umaga was in dark matches for 3 months before they put him on TV.
Yeah.
Then he kept the squashes for 2 months and before he got the flair. Or it might have been a month, I can't remember. But the point is, he didn't get to John Cena until about 4 months into the run. Where
mm-hmm.
he had a TV, for 3 weeks on TV, first he beat Triple H, then he beat Shawn Michaels. I mean, he beat them clean, then he beat John Cena clean.
And they did not have that patience with Tenzai at all. Nor was it booked nearly as competently.
Yeah, they just got screwed up. But, you know, and Tenzai, you know, again, I saw him live, and he really knew how to work. He fit in on the house shows. He wasn't doing as many of the hand gestures, you know, and he was just working on, you know, like he would just, you know, maul Cena, you know, messing up his arm. And I've watched him now, and he's just back to doing what he was doing back when he was A-Train, which is mauling dudes. That's
yeah.
what he's good at. But
yeah,
now it's like,
I've read a lot of things along those same lines.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, but that's a good example to show how they don't. Again, I'm not trying to judge because, you know, it's not an easy job. But, again, I'm just saying
no.
Looking at it as a fan, somebody that's watched them for years, and they used to know their shit about these things.
How hard was it for them to just own up to the fact that this mysterious former WWE superstar, and throwing up the air quotes here, was Albert? When he was obviously Albert. When all the fans were chanting Albert. I mean, this is what... You know, when I was growing up, nobody in the WWF felt the need to be secretive about the fact that the I in IRS stood for Irwin.
And another thing about it is, Albert was an important
gimmick. How the hell did we get to this point?
I don't really know what they're doing. And the thing about it is, they could have done weeks of intro videos by using clips from old A-Train and Albert matches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could have done that saying, this guy's coming back, he messed shit up, you know, he came for the Intercontinental title.
Yeah.
You know, you could have took the footage.
He was a force to reckon with then, and now he's even better.
Right, you could license footage from New Japan.
Yeah.
You know, which apparently is not that much because they've done it on DVDs. And, I mean, I'm not trying to second guess, but it's frustrating because someone had a... one of my friends on Facebook had a quote about how the world might be ending. It's like, TNA is the best wrestling promotion in the world. The Mets did a no-hitter. You know, maybe the world is ending because TNA seems to have their shit together.
Well, on a relative scale.
Yeah, it's like, well, I mean, they've got their shit together somewhat where they know how to do build-ups and stuff, which I knew was going to happen when they had Bruce Pritchard. Because,
yeah.
I mean, he's not great, but I've heard him on, I've listened to his podcast, you know, and I've heard him talk about wrestling. He knows his shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, I hope WWE gets their shit good, because I support WWE most of the time, because, you know, they do, number one, they take care of most of the wrestling archive footage, you know, that exists in North America. They take care of it. They're fairly generous with it in putting out DVD sets. They're not dickheads on YouTube about it, knock on wood. You know, knock on wood, they might go crazy, you know, but so far they're pretty damn cool. They're pretty fan friendly when it comes
don't
to taking care of the archive footage.
As long as it doesn't hurt Linda McMahon's senatorial campaign, I'm sure we'll all
right.
be fine.
They're, they're fairly fan friendly about this stuff, about most of this show. So I mean, I would like them to do better. And, you know, and
yeah,
had,
they also
and
have
they
a lot of wrestlers
like
I really, really like. So I'd like them to do better for that reason as well.
Yeah, you know, it's like I don't want them to fail, but it's like I'm just watching this shit, you know. And I think I would say that WWE now is run better than WCW was in '99.
Yeah.
I mean, not a lot, because, I mean, the DDP run as world champion, you know, that's not really, I mean, some of this stuff, you know, but I don't really see how this is any better than when Sting turned it.
I mean, it's a stinker, but the fact that, but just the simple fact that it's a stinker in the at all is.
Oh,
is,
hold on a second, I got another caller.
Oh, hey. Wait.
Oh, hello.
And I hear somebody mentioned my Facebook post on here.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't get the quote right exactly.
It's fine. Shit. What up?
Man, you got a cool voice.
I don't
think
we
got a book. So, what do you think about this?
Tensai or just whatever?
Just in general, just how WWE seems to be fucking up.
Yeah, basically. I mean, like you said, the whole Punk thing, they've sort of just, they neutered him early. You've given Ziggler the Money in the Bank case, and he's sitting there jobbing every time, so yay WWE.
You know, it's not talked about as much, but the Ziggler thing is really weird, too. You have him job to the world champ on one pay-per-view, and then the following pay-per-view, he wins Money in the Bank to earn a sort of sneakier title shot of the guy who just definitively beat him a couple of times, actually. Then have him later that same night get beaten up before he could attempt to cash in Money in the Bank by said champion. I mean,
well,
good.
Well, I think Money in the Bank is kind of a problem now because they can use it now to be like a cure-all. And because it worked with Edge once and it worked with CM Punk, but the difference in those cases is Edge had been built up for a year. He had just put up a hot Matt Hardy feud, so he got the belt at the right time. Punk was very over, so when he got the belt, people were ready for it because he was a brand new person. But then they thought, well, we'll just give it to Jack Swagger.
Oh, Ziggler's going to get swaggered if he gets the belt off this. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Ziggler is he's kind of bulletproof to an extent because he's so damn good.
That is kind of impressive. I think
yeah,
a friend of mine actually made a rather compelling point that on a certain level, Ziggler can get away with losing all the time because his gimmick is that of classic upper mid-card heel. So it's kind of in character for him to lose a lot.
Yeah, so, I mean, it works well enough because he looks good doing it, you know, and I always thought, you know, if a guy looks good enough in losing, it's not going to really matter. Like, if he's actually really good. Like, I always said that if I was a wrestler, like, if I was a guy that was going to take on Goldberg in a jobber match, I would like to get one really good shot in on him, then get the shit kicked out of me. Because all anybody's going to remember is that I got one good shot in.
That's true.
That's my philosophy, generally.
I think it's a sound one.
You know, that's how I, you know, because I remember Brian Kendrick would do that when he was in WWE. Even when they were trying to bury him, he would take a very spectacular bump or do something small to get himself noticed.
Mm-hmm.
So even when he got squashed, you're thinking, well, that guy is special. Oh, well, wait, Neil disappeared.
Yeah.
Well, me and Neil are having a big Mega Man episode next week, so we're going to be cussing each other for about 30 minutes.
Oh, wow, you said... I may have to call in on that one as well. I was a huge Mega Man fan back in the day.
Yeah, because we argued about Mega Man 2 versus Mega Man 3, though we've now decided that 2 is far better than 3.
Really?
Well, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I mean, that's the consensus opinion. I know there are many outliers who say 3. Honestly, I'm one of them, but that's an interesting...
Well, even
Kenji Inafune...
Well, you know, even Kenji Inafune, the creator of Mega Man, considers 3 inferior.
Yeah, I've read his reasoning, and I disagree with it. But that's for next week.
I think 2 is my favorite because it's the only one I've ever been able to beat at all.
And also, the weapons are perfect.
That, too.
Yeah, like, the weapons are perfect. In 3, a lot of stuff looks good, the music's good, but it's like, the weapons are fucking useless. And it illustrates how useless it is when you have to fight the 2 Robot Masters. But anyway, you know, we've got like 5 minutes left, you know. So, Steve, you've been working on the 80s projects.
Yes, I have. I've been presently working on the, mostly working on the Lucha edition of the 80s project, although I'm kind of waiting on some tape lists for some disc that I just got from Phil Schneider. I do not recognize, like, half of the people on these things. What I watched most recently, actually, was for the Territories project, which, you know, all the miscellaneous territories that don't have enough matches on their own to get their own set. And I've been watching some Texas All-Star Wrestling, which was the successor promotion to Southwest, which had...
That was the one that Lance Von Erich worked for, wasn't it?
Not that I've seen. I've only watched a couple of days, but I have not seen Lance Von Erich. I have seen one of the points of the interest of that one was a very, very young Shawn Michaels as one half of the new American Force. He was in that team with Paul Diamond, and before it was him, it was Nick Kaniski. So the original American Force was actually 2 Canadian guys. And then it wasn't until the new American Force that they were finally willing to accept an American, which I find interesting.
Were they billing themselves as Canadians?
I don't recall them billing themselves as Canadians.
I don't recall
getting brought up, but I couldn't help but notice. Like, that's Gene Kaniski's kid. That guy is a coach.
How much 80s Lucha footage is there?
Enough to merit a set, not as much as I would like, but what we've got is some really, really great stuff. We've got a lot of guys who, you know, who have some degree of pre-existing reputations for greatness. We've only, like, scratched the surface of before, who are really going to get fleshed out now. El Dandy, people are going to get a better picture of. Parada Morgan, who I've taken on as sort of a pet project over at Segunda Caída. Satanico, of course. People are going to see him as one of the all-time great wrestlers ever. Cyrus Shikana's profile is going to be raised a lot. I would like to see big things for Mocho Kota. It'll probably be a smaller set than the others, but it will be a very, very good one.
I started on YouTube. I accidentally, because I remember I was trying to find footage of Super Porky, and, you know, my attempts to get in Modern Lucha have tended to fail. I don't know why, but eventually I came across some 80s Lucha, early 90s, and I ended up watching that for days, because that seemed more my speed, because it seemed like there was a lot more bloody brawls.
Yeah, when it's done right, Lucha brawling is absolutely my favorite style of wrestling.
It just gets
wild as fuck, man.
I did not realize that El Higo del Santo got his mask torn so often.
That too.
Yeah, it's like, you know, there's nothing cooler than seeing a dude with his mask torn open in a bloody mess.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's one of those things that's very uniquely pro wrestling, because you're not going to find that in baseball or anything.
Oh, no. That is pure pro wrestling right there.
Okay, we're about to go off the stream, but I think I'm going to keep recording for a few minutes. You know, if I ever had money, you know, if I ever had money, I would, like, if I became a crazy billionaire, I would like to fund a triple threat boxing match.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to fund a triple threat boxing match and a triple threat MMA fight just to see what the fuck would happen, and I would hold it on a barge at sea.
There was a company that did, tried to do tag team MMA at one time. I can't remember who did it, though, but...
Yeah, it's like, you know, that's what I always say about tag teams, battle royals, triple threats. I love those because those are things you'll only see in pro wrestling.
Absolutely, man.
You know, and I mean, I don't necessarily mind a triple threat if it's done well. You know, like, if you build up to it, it's not as bad as, you know, and I kind of like those random ones they were doing Raw, but at some point they start throwing three guys into matches and there was no reason, and they didn't follow a good formula for balancing the guys out.
No, it's a tough structure to work out for a lot of guys.
I kind of got it where you just have to go paper, rock, scissors.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of the Lucha style, actually. That's sort of the Lucha style.
And you can go to a wild card. You know, and you can have a fourth, which would be a wild card.
I know we've got a three-way mask match that's likely to make the set between... Hijo del Santo, Fuerza Guerrera, and some chump named All-Star, which is basically worked like that.
Wait, they did triple threat matches in the 80s?
Huh?
They did triple threat matches in the 80s?
Yeah. Well, they did triple
threat.
They did triple threat matches in the turn of the century. I remember Frank Gotch did triple threat matches, actually.
Oh, man, I gotta look into that. Okay, guys, Murph, thanks for calling in.
No problem.
You're the first spontaneous caller I've ever had.
Give the man a round of applause.
So you'll be getting a book, so you can have that in your hat as well as the book dedication.
Woo.
Steve, call in next week and you can listen to me and Dale cuss each other over Mega Man for an hour.
I will do that. Thank you very much, Vic. It's a pleasure to be here.
Luckily we're doing it over the phone, so you can't hear me strangle him. All right, and we're out of here.